We have had a fantastic day of testimony. We have had literally 16 hours of listening to people talk about the budget repair bill, people in favor, people against, and we have heard great testimony, compelling stories from both sides, people who are concerned about the burden of government and how much it costs to live in our state, people who are concerned about having to pay toward their pensions and toward their health care. As we've gone through the day, we have gone out of our way to deal with a hearing that is bigger than probably many we have seen over the course of the past few decades. When I talked to Bob Lang, he actually said this is one of the biggest that he remembers. So we have literally gotten to the point where I haven't added up the numbers, but we are probably at somewhere between 400 or 500 people if you just do 2 minutes times the number of hours that we've been here. So we now know that we have a few people who are left. We have people who would still like to testify, but as I said in my comments, the hearing began at 10, and the people that we are now listening to got here to the hearing at 6 p.m. So the 8 hours after the hearing began, they then put their name in the hat to testify. It's not like they were already here waiting in a room and didn't get called on. So I think that we waited 8 hours after that point to a total of 16 hours, and I think it's pretty reasonable that the testimony we're hearing, while it's good and compelling personal stories, we're not necessarily plowing a whole lot of new ground. People are talking about some of the issues that we have already heard before. They have every right to do that, but the whole point is, as we said before, constituents who are here have every right to be heard. When I look at the numbers, and we've just done a quick analysis, it looks like somewhere between 2/3 and 75% of the people who have testified so far are from Dane County. So there is definitely a heavy bias toward people who live in Dane County. We represent the entire state. So I want to make sure we have ample time to go back to our own offices, call back our own constituents, talk to our own people who vote for us to ensure that we don't get a one-sided view of only people coming mostly from Dane County, that we have an opportunity to listen to everybody. And that's why 16 hours, pretty reasonable amount of time, longest hearing that I can remember, especially from the finance process, and go forward from there and allow us an opportunity tomorrow to come back. We are going to reconvene somewhere probably around noon to be able to come back, talk about what's happening in the process, do amendments, and begin to vote the bill through the process.
What kind of amendments are you looking at this point?
Honestly, I have been in the chair. I tried to be there as much as I could to listen as often as I could, so I have not been directly involved in those. We really wanted to wait and kind of listen to the entire hearing, so begin meeting tomorrow morning, looking at potential amendments that have been suggested by our members, by the public hearing, by the input we've received, and then bring them forward. I did ask the Democrats, because they had lots of time today, to begin their amendments getting drafted, so we wouldn't be waiting around for them to do it, and I know that they are drafting a considerable number. I don't know how many. I don't know what topics they'll cover, but I think at the end of the day, we'll have a good discussion of all the topics that have been brought up by the public and an opportunity to have votes on those topics.
Why do you think more people didn't come out to the hearing today in favor of the bill?
Actually, it's being held in Dane County, which is notoriously liberal and notoriously in favor of higher spending. The second thing is, for the most part, people actually are working at traditional jobs. They don't have the opportunity, like Madison teachers are going to do tomorrow, to just not show up for work for a day because they want to go protest at the Capitol. That's not how people in my district work. They actually go to their jobs. They don't just take off to go and go to a public hearing. They trust that they have elected officials who are doing their job. I send out surveys every year in my district, and I know where my constituents are. They do not want higher taxes, which is the answer that almost every single person who testified today said was the alternative to what they want to do, which is to not have the pension and benefit changes that are very, very modest. I mean, let's get back to the 30,000-foot level. At the end of the day, 88% of health insurance benefits for state employees will still be paid by taxpayers. That's twice the national average. At the end of the day, they will pay approximately half the cost of their pension benefits. More generous than many, more generous than most, actually. So there is nothing in here that's draconian. There is nothing in here that somehow puts them outside the norm. We do not correct people in their testimony. It's not my job when people make a statement that's false to say, no, there is nothing in here, and we've already met with the UW, about taking away the opportunity for tuition remission. That is not true. But people say it, and you guys report it, and I'm not going to correct every single thing in there. So we'll have an opportunity tomorrow to do that, to make sure that all the facts are straight, that everybody understands exactly what's in the bill. And while the public, I think, is well-intentioned, they don't have an opportunity to necessarily know all the details just because they're lay people.
But one of the things that people talked about a lot was not the wage and benefit. There's a lot of people talking about that, but mm-hmm. collective bargaining.
Sure.
And Ellis today interview said that Republicans in the Senate try to get Walker back off collective bargaining and just get the concessions on wages and salary and pensions and do it that way. I mean, why are the collective bargaining changes needed in this bill now if you just need the money to balance the budget?
I think Governor Walker has been very explicit in what he wants, and so have both of our leaders. We are at a point where the state of Wisconsin has very little to give, and management flexibility in order to deal with the deficit is incredibly important. People are losing sight of how serious things are. I mean, I heard a lot of people testify today that somehow you can make different changes. Well, for 10 years, those of you who've been here know, they have done accounting tricks and gimmicks and massive tax increases, and we still have a $3 billion deficit. So the only way we're going to be able to solve it is to get management flexibility so you're able to actually reduce costs. That has not happened under the negotiating system that we have had. I think that putting that proposal into state law will definitely help us reduce costs in addition so that we don't ever have to come back, hopefully, and ask for more from state workers. My goal is that we will end this legislative session so we actually balance the budget without all the tricks and the gimmicks. So 2 years from now, we come back, workers are actually going to be able to get a raise like they should be. I mean, every worker deserves a raise. I have no fault with that. But when we have the fiscal mismanagement that's happened over the course of the 8 years, we don't have a whole lot of options left. So I think taking away some of those conditions that are being bargained, don't forget, and this is, there's so much misinformation, 19 states today do not have collective bargaining for their public workers, Texas being one of them. We heard people say, I'm from Texas. We heard people say from the other states, Iowa. When you look at it, those 19 states, their teachers do a good job teaching their students. In fact, some of them have higher ACT scores or right in line with where we are, and they don't have a union. They have every opportunity. They still get vacation. They still get holidays. They still get all the same protections, but they do it in a different way. Civil service in Wisconsin, as we heard, is one of the strongest, the first in the country. So there's a lot of misinformation out there, and it's very difficult because people have this misconception. I mean, I feel sorry when people come forward and they say it's going to cost them $20,000 a couple. Well, if you do the math, the only thing that they have to pay under this bill is approximately 6% for their pension contribution. 6%, $20,000, that means they're making like $350,000 working as teachers. Well, I know that's not true, but I'm not going to correct every single person. There's just a lot of misinformation out there that frustrates me.
But with collective bargaining, I mean, can't you come back later on and take away the number of vacation days or take away some of the protections that they have? I mean, without that collective bargaining right, isn't that an option for you guys to take this stuff away through statute or whatever?
Well, I guess I'd have to think about that. Ask me. I'm sorry, I'm a little off because of the time. Ask me one more time.
Okay, so let's say next budget, you guys decide that we need cities to take away 3 vacation days each employee. I mean, there's no collective bargaining. They can't negotiate that. You could take it away unilaterally from the other guy. I mean, is that a possibility? I mean, not saying you guys would do that. But
yeah, that's not the intention.
But is that a possibility? It's not like that's the fear that they have, is that without collective bargaining, you can continue to erode away the benefits, the pensions, whatever they have. Going forward.
That's just not the way it works in the real world. I mean, 90% approximately of employees in the private sector are without a union. And you know what? When times get tough, their boss sits down with their employees and they say, how do we make this work? Sometimes they give up pay. We heard people tell that today. Sometimes they might say, let's do a different health insurance plan. Sometimes they say, you know what? I won't take as much vacation. So all of those things could potentially be on the table. But the whole goal that people are missing is we want to fix the problem so we don't have to come back in 2 years. Don't forget, Jim Doyle's the one who put in furlough days. That's a 3% pay cut. That's being restored. I didn't hear anybody out there saying, thank you for giving us back the furlough days. There's just a lot of misconception about how this works, and I don't think it's going to be something that workers should be fearful of.
Representative, what do you say to the fact that this has now risen to the level that what is arguably the most powerful teachers union in the state has decided not to go and teach class tomorrow? That hasn't happened in 16 years, anything like it. What do you say to the fact that happened? Did you see that coming, and how do you react to it?
I think it's a sad day for the kids who are in the schools. The fact that the union decides that they are going to come and protest in the Capitol and that is more important than teaching our kids, I think it's a sad day. They have every right to do it, obviously. I think in a place like Madison, which is overwhelmingly liberal and definitely not in the same sphere of political reality that the rest of the state is, it's probably something that people in Madison might not even be surprised at. But where I live, they would be shocked.
Since some rumors talking about possibly an amendment to add corrections officers to the exempt list, you know, police, fire, state patrol, and state inspector, any talk about adding corrections officers to the exempt list?
I am not going to comment on any potential amendments till we get here tomorrow.
Would you want to see those guys added?
I am not going to comment on any potential amendments till we get to the point tomorrow.